Progress.
Good morning, Chair.
Good
Good morning.
morning, Olthando, and a very good morning to the team. It is 10 o'clock now.
Yes, Chair.
Good morning, honorable members and the
Sorry, there are many
department.
chairs here. We don't know who's the chair you are referring to. That's why we are responding.
Who are we speaking to now?
What I'm saying, there are many chairpersons here. So we don't know who's the chairperson that's being referred to. Hence, we are responding. When they say, good morning, chair, we say, good morning.
Oh yeah,
I hope you.
we are all chairs. We are all chiefs. No, good morning. They are talking to the person of the Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sports, Science, and that is me as the chairperson who has called this meeting.
Oh,
And a
good
good
morning.
well and a word of welcome and appreciation for all the chairpersons from the provinces and all other members who are from provinces who are on this platform today. And also a welcome to the ministry in the and the Director General and the team. Noltando, may you fly the agenda, please. Honorable Munyai,
I'm doing okay, honorable
doing?
chairperson from the NCOP. Thank you.
Nice to see you, comrade and comrades. Let's get the agenda.
Are you able to do the agenda, Chair?
No. Okay, let me. What's up with my toys not playing very nicely?
If you can't even see the chair, then how is the chair going to see the agenda? We see the agenda, Chair. When your picture appears like you are behind the bushes.
No, it's a technical problem, but I think I will get to that part of the agenda. I think this my gadget has a serious challenge. But anyway, being that this is me, we have had this agenda for quite some days. Is there any move for adoption of this agenda?
Don't get any move the agenda, Chair.
Don't get any moves for adoption. Is there any second?
Sugar second, Chaperson.
Super seconds. Noltando, are there any additions on the agenda? If none is, yeah, the agenda is adopted. Are there apologies, Noltando? Any apologies?
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. Morning to the Deputy Minister and everyone present in the meeting. Yes, Chair, I've got apologies. The first apology is from the Minister. She won't be able to join us today due to the fact that she is in Paris for the UNESCO conference. The other apology I have is from Honorable Bacha. Honorable Bacha might join us, but he's busy with by-elections. And then another apology. The Free State Portfolio Committee is on a site visit in Kronstadt, but the chairperson of the committee might join us. I think that's the only apologies I have for now, Chair. Thank you.
No, thanks a lot. And I think these apologies are reasonable, they'll be accepted by the members. All members, the bill was introduced in Parliament, I think it was on the 10th January 2022, by the Minister of Basic Education in the National Assembly. The National Assembly Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, acting in accordance with Section 59(1) of the Constitution, 1996, facilitated public involvement and processed the Bella Bill, B2B2 2022. This version of the Bella Bill is now before the Select Committee for processing. I must also say that the Bella Bill seeks to amend the African Schools Act and the Employment of Educators Act. Actually, it's aligning them. Now, I will ask the department to take us through the alignment and on the proposed alignment, the Bella Bill. Thank you. I'll give over to the DM to open the meeting and take us through the presentation. Over to you, DM. Yes, sir, very well. As
Yeah.
usual.
Thank you so much, Chair. Greetings to you and greetings to the honorable members of the Select Committee. Greetings to the officials of the NCOP. Greetings also to the senior members of the Department of Basic Education that are led by Advocate Misa as well as Mr. Ndlebe, who are going to make the presentation of the alignment that the chairperson is speaking about. Chair, you are very correct that at its core, the bill seeks to reflect the South African aspiration for a more inclusive, equitable, efficient basic education system. It addresses key challenges that have for years hindered the progress of our education ecosystem. It does have so many critics. Some have even given its names that are intended to misleading the society, giving things that are not even in the bill itself. So this is what members of NCOP should take note of. The objectives of the bill are clear and grounded in the best interest of the learner and educators. The strategic focus of the Bella Bill is to make grade R compulsory. As we know that as things stand right now, grade R is not even funded, Chair. Yeah, maybe I can show my face. It's not even funded now. Now you've missed me. And
Sorry,
except
Chair.
to
Chairperson,
the here.
I raised my hand. Chairperson? I don't want to speak without the permission of the chair. That's why I'm calling for the chair.
The chairperson seemingly it's not in the meeting. Maybe the network kicked him out.
Oh, sorry. I wanted to ask Deputy Minister, are you talking to documentation that can be shared with us as you speak, that can be flighted so that we take concrete note on the specifics of what you are raising? Because the bill can be very complex because there are various sections that we need to take note of as you present before us. Thank you.
I'm just giving a layout. I said Mr. Ndlebe and Advocate Misa will do the actual presentation. I was just giving an overview.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay,
Yeah.
Minister. Okay, Deputy Minister.
Okay, thank you.
So I was
No, but before you proceed, and probably Nultando can assist us. There's a Zoom user here. We don't know who Zoom user who is connected in this meeting. Can Nultando assist us?
I was kicked out of the meeting. Oh.
Okay, so you can continue. We know that the network dealt with you. But there's a person who's connected as a Zoom user. We don't know who's that.
Nultando, can you check who this Zoom user is? If you don't know who that person is, then block them.
Sure, maybe it's me.
Or if they don't explain who they are. Okay, maybe we rename your gadget Honorable Lihihi so that it doesn't create DM, you may continue.
Yes, I was just giving an overview so that when we present, I shall have given the overview. Honorable Silizi was asking, this is the actual presentation. I was giving an overview as to what are the strategic focus of the Bella Bill to make GRACE-R compulsory, to serve, to capture the essence of court judgment in order to ensure that it gives effect to the Bill of Rights, and in particular the right to procedurally fair administrative action. It provides for financial and public accountability framework for government bodies and provincial government, system and administrative improvements in terms of admission policy, in particular pertaining to undocumented learners, and for technical and substantive adjustments, clarify certain existing provisions in said provisions which are not provided for in the existing legislation, and strengthen enforcement mechanisms for offenses and penalties. Sometimes you find that you go to court, this has happened, the HOD cannot have a leg to stand on because it's not catered for in the current legislation. So, and the courts will say, no, this should have been part of the act. That's why we said, no, let's do this. It has nothing to do with curriculum. It has nothing to do with all the other things people are mentioning. But Mr. Ndlebe and Dr. and Advocate Nisa will take us through the actual presentation. With your permission, Chair, we can allow them to come in. They know themselves who's going to present.
They may continue.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Ndlebe, Advocate Nisa, you know who's going to present.
Thank you very much, Ian. And I think that you can hear me, and you can tell me if you cannot hear me. Good morning to the Deputy Minister, Chairperson of the State Committee, Honourable Members, and all officials on this particular call. I'm just trying to get my screen to move. It seems to be stuck. I'm not sure if... you can see the presentation now.
Yes, Advocate.
Okay.
So, yes, it is moving. It's ambulating.
Thank you very much. So the process is for the Select Committee to note the B version of the Bella Bill for further discussion. The Minister of Basic Education had identified the review of all basic education legislation as a strategic priority for the Department of Basic Education. And you will see that this particular bill amends the South African Schools Act, which I shall refer to SASA, as well as the Employment of Educators Act, which we abbreviate as the EEA. So what caused and what informed the amendments in the Bill of Bill or the amendments of the South African Schools Act? What were the mischiefs that we were trying to cure? So you would find that, like Deputy Minister alluded to, we have had a lot of court judgments, and we have tried to ensure that all the gaps that have been identified from these judgments have now been closed in the Bill of Bill. And it is also to ensure that we continue to protect and give effect to Bill of Rights. Some of the amendments will provide for financial and public accountability frameworks for governing bodies and provincial departments. There are system improvements in terms of admissions, particularly when it comes to learners who do not have the necessary documents. We also protect their interests and ensure that they are given their rights to basic education, provide for additional regulatory powers of minister, and enhancing decision-making and oversight powers of HODs and MECs. We also address provincial contextual needs such as central procurement, home education, and we've included a dispute resolution mechanism where there is a dispute between the SGB and the HOD or the SGB and the MEC in order to prevent litigation and to ensure that these disputes are settled amicably. And then, of course, the bill caters for technical as well as substantive amendments, clarifying certain existing provisions, inserting provisions which are not provided for in existing legislation, and overall strengthening the enforcement mechanisms for offences and penalties. So some history on the bill. The bill was published for public comment on 13th October 2017, and more than 5,000 written submissions were received by the department from stakeholders and the general public. All 9 provincial education departments, the HEPCOM, and the Council of Education Ministers were consulted, and the draft amendment bill was also circulated to all national departments for comment. The written comments received from the latter processes were considered and consolidated into the draft amendment bill. After the consolidation of the comments into the draft amendment bill, the SGB Association, teacher unions, and the home education stakeholders were subsequently invited to submit further comments on the latest version of the Bella Bill, and that was because many of the provisions affect these particular stakeholders. And in addition to affording them this additional opportunity, Minister also invited them for a consultative meeting on the 27th and 28th January 2020, so that we have an agreement in terms of the version of the Bella Bill that then go to the Portfolio Committee. And the bill was then presented on the 5th of May 2021 to the Portfolio Committee. On completion of the letter process, the draft amendment bill was also presented to NEDLAG on the 23rd April 2020 by the DBE. After 7 meetings with NEDLAG, the final report from NEDLAG was received in October 2020. The bill also went through the socio-economic impact assessment, and you would find that the bill incorporates the comments made in terms of the CS report. Now, the bill does have financial implications, and this includes costing for procurement of competent assessors, the provision for personnel by provincial departments, as well as the provision of educators and infrastructure for grade R. The pre-certification from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors was also received, and in August 2021, the bill was presented to the Technical Working Group for the bill to be submitted to the Social Protection Community and Human Development Cluster on 8th September 2021. The bill was presented to the SPCHD cluster, and the bill was approved to be submitted to Cabinet for introduction to Parliament. On 9th November 2021, the Bella Bill was presented to the Cabinet Committee at a meeting that took place on 24th November 2021. The Bella Bill was approved for submission to Parliament. On 15th December 2021, the Bella Bill was referred to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education for consideration and reporting. The bill was passed as a Section 76 bill, and is an ordinary bill affecting the provinces. On 26 September 2023, the committee adopted the Bella Bill as amended and the A-list. On 26 October 2023, the bill was adopted by the National Assembly and approved for tabling at the National Council of Provinces. I will now take you through a clause-by-clause analysis of the sections in the bill that have been amended. Clause 1 deals with the amendment of the definition section, and some of the amendments that have been effected is to include a definition of basic education, and Ned Lack felt that it was important to have a definition of basic education. So we've included this definition, and it states that basic education includes grade R to grade 12 as evidenced in the National Curriculum Statement. Then we have a definition of a competent assessor, which means an educator registered with the South African Council for Educators as defined in the South African Council for Educators Act, a recognized professional in the field of education, or a person or body registered with the South African Qualifications Authority as defined in the National Qualifications Framework Act of 2008. We also have included a definition of corporal punishment because there seemed to be a need for such. People were confused as to what corporal punishment encompasses. Hence, we say that it means any deliberate act against a child that inflicts pain or physical discomfort, however light, to punish or contain the child, which includes, but is not limited to, hitting, slapping, slapping, pinching or scratching with the hand or any object, kicking, shaking, throwing objects at, burning, scalding, biting, pulling hair, boxing ears, pulling or pushing children, and forcing children to stay in uncomfortable positions, forced ingestion, washing children's mouths out with soap, denying meals, heat, and shelter, forcing child to do exercises which are not in accordance with curriculum applicable to the learner, or denying or restricting a child's use of the toilet. We've also subsequently included the definition of special educational needs, which means education designed to facilitate the learning of individuals who, for a variety of reasons, require additional support and adaptive pedagogical methods in order to participate and meet learning objectives in an educational program. So we then have a clause 2. To amend section 3.1 of the SASA to provide that school attendance is compulsory from grade 5 at the age of 6 and no longer from grade 1. It also professes to increase the penalty provision, which is already in the Bella Bill, from 6 months to 12 months. Then we have clause 3, and clause 3 provides for the monitoring of school attendance by educators, principals, and school governing bodies. And it makes the educators, principals, and school governing bodies accountable and responsible for learners in their care. Enrollment of learners and their regular and punctual attendance at the school are a prerequisite for an educated nation. For educators, the principal and the SGB are parentis in loco, must take responsibility and accountability for learners that are within their school community by ascertaining the whereabouts of a learner who absents himself or herself from school for a period of more than 3 days without valid reason. Then we have clause 4 of the bill, which seeks to amend section 5 of the SASA. It provides for an admission age that, despite the age at which school attendance is compulsory, as stipulated in section 3.1, a parent may, if he or she so wishes and subject to a few conditions, enrolls a child at school to start attending grade R at a younger age, provided that if a school has limited capacity for admission to grade R, preference be given to learners who are subject to compulsory attendance. It also provides for the governing body of the school to submit the admission policy of the school to the head of department for approval. Then we have clause 5, which is an amendment of section 6 of the South African Schools Act, and it provides that it also provides for the South African Sign Language, and it gives it the status of an official language for purposes of learning at a public school. And it provides for the governing body to submit the language policy of the public school and any amendment thereof to the head of department for approval. And you find that it takes us through the whole process and mechanism that complies with Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and where an SGB is not satisfied with submissions made by the HOD, it provides for an appeal mechanism, etc., in order to ensure that all representations are taken into account. Then we have section 6, which amends section 6 capital A of the SASA to empower the minister to appoint outside agencies, that is a person, organization, or group of persons, to advise the minister on matters relating to national curriculum statement and the national process and procedures for the assessment of learner achievement. This allows the minister to obtain input from a broader spectrum of people. Then we have clause 7, and clause 7 seeks to amend section 8 of the SASA by providing clause 7A that not only any applicable provincial law, but also the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa and the SASA must be taken into account when a public school adopts a code of conduct. The clause also makes provision for an exemption clause, making it possible to exempt learners upon application and on just cause from complying with certain provisions of the code of conduct. And this will occur in circumstances in order for the schools to take into account the diverse cultural beliefs, religious observances, and medical circumstances of the learner at the school. Then we have clause 8, which seeks to amend section 8 capital A. This clause of in the SASA deals with the random search and seizure and drug testing at schools. And it also makes it clear that a school has the right to search an individual learner and not only a group of learners. And consequential amendments in these regards are proposed in the section. This clause also seeks to extend the provision of section 8A, the SASA, regarding the possession of liquor by a learner to make the consequential amendments to the section, as alcohol was not included in this particular section. And this amendment is necessitated by the fact that learners have increasingly been found in possession of or abusing liquor, the variety of drugs, dependence-reducing substances, performance-enhancing substances, and the like, and that there are many cases of learners expelled because of such abuses. Then we have clause 9, which is in section 9 of the SASA, and this provides a list of acts of serious misconduct and clarify what constitutes an act of serious misconduct by learners. Then we have clause 10, and clause 10 seeks to amend section 10 of the SASA by extending the prohibition of corporal punishment being administered to learners to include during a school activity or in a hostel accommodation, accommodating learners of schools. This amendment is necessary in order to close the gaps that exist in the system. So clause 11 amends section 10, capital A of the SASA to prohibit initiation practices in school. Okay, we just said that. So we have clause 12, which seeks to amend section 12 of the SASA And it provides that the SGB of the school may apply to the MEC to be designated as a public school with a specialized focus on talent. The HOD may also identify a public school to be so designated and may make a recommendation to the MEC in this regard. Then we have section 13, which deals with the amendment to section 12 of the SASA, and to provide for instances where two or more schools are merged and a new public school will be established. And it also goes into detail with regards to the methods of communicating with interested parties in regard to such merger. It clarifies there are time frames within which the MEC must act, and the provision is made for the case where the MEC fails to act within stipulated periods, and further details of the process to be followed by the MEC and the SGB is concerned. Then we have clause 14, which seeks to amend section 21 of the SASA to empower the HOD to centrally procure identified learning and teaching support material for public schools in consultation with the SGB on the basis of efficient, effective, and economic utilization of public forms or funds or reform norms and standards. And this amendment is proposed in order to bring about economies of scale. Now, this particular provision has also been misinterpreted to mean that, you know, the HOD can act unilaterally. And this is not the case. Because if you look at the wording of the provision, you will see that it says that the HOD can centrally procure only if it is agreed with the SGB. And that's why we have the terminology in consultation with the SGB. It is not after consultation. It is in consultation. In other words, there must be agreement between the HOD and the SGB before a decision is made or to centrally procure. Then we have clause 15, which seeks to amend section 22 of the SASA to empower the HOD to go on reasonable grounds and after complying with prescribed requirements, one or more functions of an SGB. And you will note that in section 22, as it stands in SASA, it said a function. Now we are saying one or more functions. So we're giving that power to the HOD. And this particular provision also lays out the process that must be followed before this can be done. And it is aligned with the principles of the Promotion Administrative Justice Act in order to ensure that representations are taken into consideration before a final decision is made. Then we have clause 16. Which amends section 23 of the SASA to empower the governing body to co-opt persons from outside the community with the relevant expertise to assist in discharging its functions. And in this way, the SGB will be allowed to acquire the requisite skills from outside the community in which the school is located without changing the requirement that the majority of the SGB members must be parents. So clause 17 seeks to amend section 24 of the SASA by substituting the MEC with the minister and the provincial gazette with gazette in regard to arrangements for the election of members of an SGB of a public school for learners with special educational needs. And currently, each province deals with these matters in its own preferred way. And by making this amendment, we hope that it will provide uniformity and consistency in how this is done across the provinces. Then we have clause 18, which seeks to insert section 24A to regulate membership of a governing body of a public school with a specialized focus on talent. And this area is currently not regulated. Then we have clause 19, which seeks to amend section 25 of the SASA to empower the HOD to dissolve an SGB that has ceased to perform functions allocated to it in terms of the Act, if the HOD has reasonable grounds to do so, And in this case, the MEC then becomes the appeal authority. And again, all these provisions have been aligned with court judgments in order to ensure that the process that the HOD follows is constitutionally aligned with the constitutionally and is constitutionally correct. Clause 20 expands on the provision of Section 26 of the SASA to provide for the declaration of a direct or indirect personal and financial interest that an SGB member or any of his or her family members or close friends or business partners has, and under such circumstances, the recusal of the SGB members. And the clause further provides that should a SGB member also have knowledge that a member whose presence has a personal or financial interest in the matter under discussion, the SGB may not take a decision on the matter until such member has withdrawn from the meeting. The proposed amendment is made to promote the prevention of corruption and to promote good governance. It's to prevent corruption and to promote good governance. Then we come to clause 21, which seeks to amend Section 27 of the SASA to provide that no member of the governing body may be remunerated in any way for the performance of his or her duties, particularly for the attendance of meetings and school activities. Then we have Clause 22, which seeks to amend Section 28 of the SASA to empower the minister to determine the election of members of the governing body. Our current law entrusted this on the MECs, and like, you know, with the provisions on SGBs for schools with special educational needs, we're trying to ensure that there's consistency and that in terms of how the election is done, and therefore we are substituting minister with a new school. Clause 23 seeks to amend Section 29 of the SASA to provide that where reasonably practicable, only a parent member of an SGB who is not employed at school may serve as the chairperson of the finance committee of that public school. And this amendment seeks to promote good governance. Then clause 24 seeks to amend Section 32 of the SASA to provide for a technical amendment that is required as a result of the provision of the Children's Act, which changed the age of my minority from 21 to 18 years. And basically, we're trying to ensure that learners do not take part in the process to employ educators, and also to enter into a legally binding contract on behalf of the school. Then we have clause 25, which seeks to amend section 33 of the SASA, which deals with the closure of public schools. And the MEC must embark on a comprehensive consultative process before closing the school. The proposed amendment also empowers the MEC to close a public school in his or her sole discretion if there are no learners registered at that public school. However, the MEC must first verify by means of a site inspection by an official nominated by him or her that there are no learners registered at the school. The amendment also empowers the MEC to close a public school after following a prescribed consultative process. And in the case of a primary school, if there are 135 or fewer learners, and in case of a secondary school, 200 or fewer learners. And the MEC must inform interested parties of his or her decision in the above regard. And if the decision is to close a public school, must make arrangements for the learners of the school to attend another school, and where appropriate, make arrangements for the transport of qualifying learners to that school. Now, the purpose of this amendment is to provide for a proper consultative process and to simplify the procedure when dealing with closure of a public school. Then we have clause 26, which seeks to amend section 36 of the SASA to provide that the SGB must seek approval from the MEC to enter into lease agreements for any purpose, including loans and overdrafts, which are already provided for in the section. Then we have clause 27, which amends section 37, and this is just a technical amendment where we are changing the word directions, as it's now being substituted by the word directives. Clause 28 is deals with the amendment of Section 38 of the SASA to provide that a document explaining the budget of the school together with the budget itself must be made available to parents before the budget is presented to a general meeting of parents for consideration. It also sets out the procedure that an SGB must follow if it proposes to deviate from the initial budget by 10% or more of the initial approved budget, or if it proposes to reallocate funds for purposes that is different from the purpose set out in the budget originally approved by a general meeting of parents. Then we have clause 29 of the bill, which seeks to amend section 38, capital A of the SASA to extend its application to a state employee who is paid any additional remuneration or any other financial benefits or benefits in kind. Section 30 seeks to amend section 41 of the SASA by inserting a new subsection to capital A to provide that when a parent applies for exemption from the payment of school fees, such parents may submit additional documentary evidence in the form of an affidavit in instances where information cannot be obtained from the other parent of the learner. The proposed amendment aims to lessen the burden on single parents whose ex-partners are untraceable or unwilling to provide information on their financial situation. Then we have clause 31, which proposes to substitute section 42 of the SASA to provide that the SGB of a public school must keep detailed records on prescribed aspects of its financial affairs, draw up annual financial statements within a specified time and in a specified manner, and present the financial records and statements to an annual general meeting of parents. And the proposed amendment expands the existing provisions contained in section 42 in order to ensure transparent accounting and good governance. Then we have clause 32, which seeks to amend section 43 of the SASA in order to empower the HOD, if he or she deems it necessary on just cause shown, to authorize an investigation into the financial affairs of a public school and to request the AG to undertake an audit of records and financial statements of a public school or appoint a forensic auditors or forensic investigators to conduct forensic investigation into the financial affairs of the public school. And all of these steps must be taken in accordance with specified requirements. Clause 33 seeks to amend section 46 of the SASA. The object of the amendment is to increase the penalty provision of any person who operates an unregistered independent school. Law 34 seeks to amend section 48 of the SASA to provide that the subsidy granted to an independent school can be made subject to conditions determined by the MEC. Law 35 seeks to substitute section 51 of the SASA to provide clarity in regards to home education. The amendment makes it clear that learners may be educated at home only if they are registered for such education. Learners are allowed to follow a curriculum that's different from a public school, provided that the quality of education received is not inferior to a public school. And the reason for this is that sometimes you would find a learner who is homeschooled. After a while, the parent wants them to be introduced back to the public schooling system, and then we need to equate the level of education that they've received at home with that of a public school in order to ensure that they are slotted within in the correct grade. Then we have clause 36, which is the amendment of section 59 of the SASA. It provides for an offense and penalty against the parent or any person who submits false, misleading or forged documents when making an application for admission of a learner or exemption from payment of school fees. Then we have 1237, which inserts the new section 59 capital A into the FAFSA to provide for dispute resolution mechanism in the event of any dispute between an SGB and the HOD or the SGB and the MEC. It is anticipated that this amendment will save costs for all concerned and will enable the parties involved to resolve disputes amicably. Clause 38 seeks to amend Section 60 of the SASA. This section deals with the liability of the state for any delictual or contractual damages caused as a result of any school activity conducted by a public school for which the public school has been liable. The proposed amendment to Section 60 excludes the liability of the state if the provisions of Section 36(2) of the SASA have not been compliant with that they have not got their necessary approvals to engage in such activity like contracts. Section 39 seeks to amend Section 61 of the SASA to extend the powers of the minister to make regulations on the management of learner pregnancies, on the admission of learners to public schools, on the prohibition of the payment of unauthorized remuneration, or the giving of other financial benefits or benefits in kind to employees, on minimum norms and standards for provincial teacher development institutes and district teacher development centers, and on the organization's roles and responsibilities of education districts, and on a national education information system. Now, the issue of management of learner pregnancy, the regulations that minister will make, is to ensure that teachers who are having a challenge with the increasing number of learners who are pregnant in school, they understand their role in managing such learners. And that is the aim of this particular regulation and nothing else. Clause 40 provides for the insertion of a phrase into the preamble of the SASA to facilitate the education of children through the promotion and protection of the right to basic education. And then we've got clause 41 and 42, which amend section 1 and 5 of the Employment of Educators Act. And the object is to effect technical amendments to the EAA in order to align the basic education legislation with current developments, to also delete all obsolete provisions and definitions, such as further education and training institution and adult basic education centers, which are currently under the domain of the Department of Higher Education, Science and Innovation. As you know, the Department of Education split into the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Higher Education, and hence these amendments are required. Clause 43 seeks to amend Section 7 of the Employment of Educators Act to extend the application thereof to promotions on any educator establishment and to bring it in line with the provision of the Citation of Constitutional Laws Act 2005. The clause further provides for the possibility that an appointment to a promotional post can be made on probation. Then clause 44, 45, and 46 also seek to effect technical amendments to sections 8, 9, and 11 of the Employment of Educators Act to bring it in line with current developments in the sector. Clause 47 amends section 17 of the EEA by inserting a phrase that expands the list of acts of serious misconduct. Clause 48 seeks to effect technical amendments to section 18 of the EEA. Clause 49 inserts a new section 19 in the EEA prohibiting educators from conducting business with the state or from being a director of a public or private company conducting business with the state, and creates an offence should an educator contravene the above-mentioned provision. Clause 56 to amend section 35 of the EEA to empower the minister to promulgate regulations on norms and standards for district staffing. Clause 51 seeks to repeal section 38 of the EEA. Clause 52 and 53 seeks to effect technical amendments to section 18 and schedule 2 of the EEA. And clause 55 provides for a short title implementation. Thank you very much, Chairperson. person, I'm done.
I'm trying to get to my mic. I was muted. Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. Are there additions from the team? Are there other additions? If none, let me see. Yeah, then members, let us engage with the questions of clarity on the I'll check the names. I see the hand of Honorable Christians. And I see that is the only hand in the meeting for now. Oh, and this Honorable Nyai, Honorable in that order. Honorable Christians.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to the department. I have quite a few questions, Chairperson, but you can stop me when I'm going over my time. So, with regards to the support being offered to governing bodies, excuse me about that, can the department please provide with examples how support has been offered to governing bodies and interested parties in formulating representations on policy or government or act government related matters as before us today? What support has been offered to governing bodies then? With regard to departmental support also, how is that available? How is that made available to school governing bodies and other interested parties to formulate meaningful and impactful representations during public hearings, as required by the proposed amendments? How will the department ensure that this is done? Because as we can see, the process is quite rushed. So will any support be offered to school governing bodies and other interested parties to then meaningfully engage during public hearings? Then there's great emphasis on age-appropriate disciplinary proceedings. Now, what practical support and tools are being provided to teachers working in challenging environments to encourage desired teaching practices during disciplinary proceedings? And then also, can the department then also provide insights into support and advice offered by the department during the processing of the billable, especially, and I think this is one of the main concerns currently that is also out in the public, and that many people, even schools, have mentioned that the processing of the billable, considering the time constraints of the sixth administration. So what is the rationale behind the decision to approve the bill for tabling, considering that learners are writing examinations and the process will be rushed to a conclusion? Given the limited time available during the sixth administration, can the department please elaborate on what kind of support and advice available from the department is given to all parties concerned in the processing of the billable? And then, Chairperson, with regard to specific issues on slide 18, can the department please explain in practical terms how the proposed amendment to insert a new section 59A into the SASSA will save costs and promote amicable dispute resolution between SGBs and provincial HODs or MECs? And if possible, what are the current costs associated with dispute resolution? And then,
Honorable Christians, you'll have a second bite. Let's give other members. There's Honorable Dongeni also on the line. You are recognized. Honorable Munyai, you'll get a second chance.
Thank you. Thank you very much. First and foremost, I'm sure as a province, we'll sit and as a portfolio committee, we'll sit and make contribution to this bill
and forward to your good self in the MCOP. The presenter from time to time was quoting issues, the basis of amendment is precisely because of the various court cases and so on. So, and we don't have that basis, those court rulings, unless if those court rulings, orders of the court could be shared ourselves so that we understand the context. Other things on, I think, on slide number 3 on the reforms. Number 4, slide number 3, item number, rationale number 4. In the context of separation of power, the oversight of the MEC is done by legislature or the portfolio committee, but not by the executive. So that's the other things. And I think what is the rationale for centralization of the procurement? Is there any rationale? But let me go to the slides where I have on clause 7, where the provisional act is not the only applicable for provisional law will be not applicable, but the constitution agree fully with that section because South Africa, we are not a federal state, but a unitary state. In that context, I would agree with that clause 7. But the measure of schools, you know, or of schools, hey, these issues have its own implication, as you know. There will be a lack of infrastructure, there'll be over what call, you know, there'll be many students in the classroom and so on. We saw this development because it ended up closing some of the, that happened on health, not on school. So I think we'll have to look at these issues. And also with regard to, again, the slide 13, clause number 14, that seeks to amend section 21, to empower the HOD. There's a reference to HOD. Is this the HOD of the national government? What happened? What will be the role of the HOD of the provincial government? And that's what I wanted to check. And also slide number 14, because if you look that the competency work of the educators are subject to SGB all the time, other than the focus area as PESASA on mandate of SGB. There'll be a lot of challenges at school that can really create a lot of problems. Even just to address issues of SGB. What if the SGB, no, I don't want to give a rationale of the school because it could be a problem in this regard. And I'm sure issues of speaking of quality, equating the home education plus that of the department when people are coming to the department and say that it should not be inferior. It will be very difficult because the curriculum will be different in my view. I won't take time, but also on slide 15, with regard to election of members of the school governing body, the MEC still does that, no problem, we still have that authority. 16, with regard to amendment of section 36 of SASA, to provide SGB must seek an approval of the MEC to enter into lease agreement. I disagree because they can really overstretch. The risk could be high. And ultimately, the department can have a problem. I agree with that bill, that section. I think on section 28, it must be explicit
when you say that the parents, the budget must be made available to the parent before the budget is presented to a general meeting. And I'm sure you seek to say that a parent component of the SGB, which I think it must be explicit rather than just be general. I don't want to go to everything, Honorable Chair, because my view is that as the portfolio committee, we have to meet, and to some degree, we may go, section by section of the bill, and send it back to NCOP. But the final arbiter will be the NCOP themselves. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Chair is not on the platform. Let me raise my question for the time being.
Yeah, so he's in, and again, I will send in for him.
Thank you. My question is on slide 20, clause 47, amendment section 17 of the EEA, by inserting a phrase that expands the list of acts on serious misconduct. If they can elaborate on the expected impact due to the expanded list of acts of serious misconduct. The second one is on slide 21, clause 47. No, clause 49, I'm sorry. Inserts a new section 19 into the EEA, prohibiting educators from conducting business with the state or from being a director of a public or a private company conducting business with the state, and creates an offense should any educator contravene the above mentioned provision. If they can elaborate on the number of educators who have conducted business with the state, or a director of a public or a private company conducting business with the state, and elaborate on the consequence management taking against such educators, and further elaborate on how alignment will improve in the process. I'm not quite sure whether I can carry on about this one. Issues for consideration as presented in the first research brief, which refers to brief section 3 of the South African School Act 1996, is hereby amend A by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection 1, subject to this act and any applicable provincial law. Every parent must cause every land for whom he or she is responsible to attend a school starting from grade R on the first school day of the year, in which that learner reaches the age of 7 or 6 years and not leaving school until the last day of the year, in which that learner reaches the age of 15 years, with complete grade 9, whichever occurs first. My question is, will attendance in year preceding grade R linked to ECD become compulsory soon? And the last one, Chair. The last, which is the clause amendment on section 3.222. Can you please elaborate on the current consequence management applied to a parent or a guardian or person who prevents a child from attending school? And then elaborate on the mechanism currently used by the department to identify a child who is being prevented from attending school. And then the last one, elaborate on how the department is foreseeing how street children are to be granted access to a school, as they are most likely being prevented to some extent to attend a school, noting the contextual challenge linking to the street children. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Orun Dongeni. The other thing that is a challenge, actually, is what we see every day in the morning or in the afternoons when we knock off going home. There will be people with children who are supposed to be school-going age, begging at the street corners. And some of the schools are non-South Africans. You do find South Africans and non-South Africans. And the non-South Africans, one will tell you that, no, they cannot go there because the schools do not accept their children. So in an instance like that, how do we involve social development, for instance, to help us in identifying and or taking care of some of those children who find themselves in such situations? And at the same time, you know, the municipal police, I think so, on the road junctions must also help in identifying those people and then reporting them. There's honorably his hand that's up, and then from there we'll check if there is a second bite and then get the question answered. Over to you, Honorable Hihi, and then followed by Ndate Ntsube.
Chairperson, ke batla go botsa ka dijo tseo di jwang ke bana ko dikolong tse di bolwang ke NSNP. Di tlhatlhobiwa ke lefapha le feng? Ebile a ke tse di siametseng ko bana ko dikolong ka ntlha ya bontsi ba bangwe ba kudisitswe ke tsone kwa sekolong sa Gontse Primary ko tswelelang Wolmaranstad. And gone ko Wolmaranstad ko go be go ha SASSA e thutile ebile e hurugetse kwa boagombong ka ha bo le tlhatlhwa tlase. Ke botsa gore ke ka ntlha ya eng go sa agiwe boago jwa SASSA ko kgotsa ba neelwe boago bongwe ba puso teng ko Wolmaranstad. Ke a leboga mojosi. Thank you, sir.
No, thanks, Honorable Hihi. Some of the questions will have to be answered some other time, particularly about relating to a particular school in a region, in a province. They may not have that information on the table now, but I think they'll give that information later. But in terms of and then they'll answer where they think they can answer. Honorable Ntsube, over to you. Thanks, Honorable B.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation by the department chair. I should say that I am really covered by Mr. Munyai, Chair. I just one question, Chair, for me. I think it's on slide 11. On clause 6, that says it empowers minister to appoint outside agencies or persons to advise her on matters of national curriculum and so on and so forth. I just want to check, Chair, with the department, what would be the case if a minister appoints such person from the outside? And then what would be the measures or methods be used for the appointment of such an agency or persons? Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is my question.
Thanks, Honorable Ntsube, comrades. And to look at the other ones. Yeah, that will be all. Let me go over to the department to respond, and then after
sorry,
that,
we'll I raise my hand again. Sorry.
Who is that?
Honorable Munyai, thank you.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a second bite after the first questions were answered. Or should we just ask all the questions at once?
Mine is like just
It's a process issue. Yes, you can.
No, I thought this bill is coming from the NCOP to come and present this bill to 9 provinces, right? So if that is the case, because the NCOP, every contribution that will come from various provinces goes back to the NCOP to agree and disagree on the final outcome. So why will they, therefore, members of the same portfolio committee of the NCOP will come and try to argue about their own bill here when it's shared with us? That is the only issue, if I may be clarified.
No, Honorable Nyai, what is happening is the bill is presented for the first time to the NCOP, and we are permanent delegates coming from legislatures. So in this briefing, because the bill will end up being in the provinces, you are all invited to come and get the briefing from the Department of Basic Education on how the bill, on what the bill means, and what and where.
I'm covered.
Yeah. So that is the process. Honorable Christians, let me give you some few minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, I mean to say. And then if anyone wants to have a second bite, we do that so that we can get to finality. Oh, they say, sorry, before that, they say the hand of Honorable Mate, SV. You are recognized, Honorable Mate.
Thanks, person of the day. Mine is, I've been going through this bill, but my concern is still on the issue of foreign nationals, because the bill says nothing about it. So if it remains quiet, why are even most of the children that are not going to school, because they are foreign nationals, and some of them, they are here today permanently, so because their parents died in this country without documents and we cannot take them back. What are we doing with this? I want the department to tell us, what are we going to do with this? Because some of them are being turned away from schools to say they don't have documents. And yes, they don't have documents. So what are we doing about it? Thanks, Chepes.
You're welcome, ma'am. Honorable, is your hand still up, or is it a general hand? Okay, Honorable Christians, just some 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is just about the resources for implementation. Now, in light of the proposed amendments, it is crucial to understand how the department plans to allocate the necessary resources for successful implementation of the bill. So this includes the funding for new programs, additional staff, and infrastructure improvements. Can the department just elaborate on that, please? And then just lastly, the teacher training and development. Given the focus, again, on the disciplinary proceedings and ensuring conducive work environments for teachers, it is important also that the department explore training and professional development opportunities available to teachers. What is going to be done in that case? And then also, can the department just elaborate on the parental involvement, the roles and responsibilities, how the department plans to engage and educate parents about changes and encourage their active involvement in the education of their children? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We know whether the department has a capacity building and support that it gives to the provincial education department. But let us give the department a chance to respond to questions as asked by the members. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, on the...
Yes.
Thank you. On the other is that are not necessarily related to the bill, you are very correct that maybe members will ask those questions again, because today here we're presenting the bill that comes from the National Assembly. It started in the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education, started in the department to the Portfolio Committee, which did public consultation, then National Assembly, now it's in the SNSOP. And it's good that we come and clarify what we mean by certain clauses, why, and even the financial implications. We are not going to specific on foreign nationals to say, yeah, on foreign nationals, this is what the bill says, because we have lost so many cases regarding foreign national children, illegal foreigners. We have lost many cases. So all children, we just take them as children. So we speak about children in South Africa. We cannot now put other things that are opening other cases where, but in our schools, there's no child that gets disadvantaged. All learners are admitted, regardless of their status, whether they came to the country legally or illegally. So we admit all learners, but they get stuck when they have to go to university. But in the basic education sector, there's nothing like that. So we cannot put anything that speaks about foreign children, because the bill is for South African children and children in South Africa. So let me allow the colleagues to respond on the specific clauses that the members asked about, that we take the process forward. My network is becoming a bit terrible, Chair. I may be cut off. So if you no longer find me, but I will try to reconnect if I can, but I am part of this meeting throughout. Let me allow Advocate Mista and Dr. Andrewe and those that are supporting them to deal with the specific matter of clauses. Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck with your network.
Yeah, as long as I'm not in Limpopo, I'm in the Northern Cape. It's a sister department to Limpopo's network. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dean and Chairperson. So, Honorable Christians asked about, you know, the timing of the bill and its examination. I think that when it comes to the department, we have a section that deals with examinations, and they will be dealing with the examination. The process of the bill is separate to the examinations, and you know, this will continue through the legislative pipeline. And with regards to slide 18, that is the insertion of section 59 capital A on the dispute resolution mechanism and how will this save costs. Remember that what we're trying to promote here is cooperative governance. We have a tripartite agreement, and this is, you know, what we're trying to promote amongst the parent, teacher, and the SGB, that for us to cooperate with each other, if there is a dispute, not for us to immediately start to litigate each other, but try to sit down and resolve the issues amicably. And if all fails, you know, the intervention of the HOD, the MEC, if that fails, then, you know, litigation will pursue. There are currently not many litigation or cases that we have in this regard, but it is in anticipation of litigation or to prevent or mitigate such litigation that we have this particular provision. And it will then assist us in saving costs by not going to court, because councils today cost a lot. And hence, we are proposing this dispute resolution clause. Mr. Honorable Member Munyai, I think, you know, he indicated, he made many comments, and he asked for the court judgments. We can share the different court judgments, and we can list them and also provide a summary of them and send them through. That can be done. Now, what was the purpose of, you know, central procurement? And like we said, it was to facilitate and to encourage economies of scale, particularly where provinces procure such at exorbitant prices and are not able to procure on time. This will then be discussed with the SGB, and only after agreement such procurement will take place. I think Mr. Ndlebe can deal with the issue of merger of schools. Just trying to make sure that I don't miss out anything. Yes, in terms of Section 28, it is explicit, you know, that the finances must be discussed or will be openly available to the parents. So slide 10, sorry, slide 20, section 47, that is a list of a serious misconduct in terms of the Employment of Educators Act, and it is there to clarify this particular issue of misconduct so that there is no misconception as to what constitutes a serious misconduct. So that has been included in the bill. So in terms of the clause where we're trying to align the clause that prevents a public servant from engaging in business with the state to also ensure that it is an Employment Educators Act in order to prevent such from happening and to prevent corruption from occurring. So that is why that particular provision there, with regards to statistics on how many teachers have been doing this and what is the consequence management, that I don't have at my disposal right now. In terms of Section 3, yes, we are making grade R compulsory. And as you know, we hope that in the future, learners below the age of 6 and other aspects of ECD can become compulsory incrementally. But once the bill is passed, then we say that from grade R going upwards will be compulsory. Elaborate on the consequence management. So when it comes to parents, education department cannot impose consequent management on parents. However, we can counsel and speak to them when they are not sending their children to school, in order to ensure that there's a process where the HOD can even give them a notice where they are preventing their children from attending school, and to ensure that they do have access to education. And there is a penalty clause there that imposes a penalty on a parent who deliberately prevents their child from attending school, because every child has a right to education. Now, indeed, I think that, you know, when it comes to children on the street corners, etc., we still need, as a country, to address these particular issues to ensure that every learner of a compulsory school age is afforded the opportunity to basic education at the least. And indeed, it will require a joint effort by all the interested parties or departments, such as social development, such as the police force, etc., to ensure that this happens. So with regards to the appointment of Prime Minister of, you know, persons, experts to assist her, this will follow the normal procurement process. And I think we all know the PFMA very well, that we have to ensure that the processes in terms of the PFMA and the supply chain management processes, if there are cost implications, that it is followed. Sometimes you find there are experts from university, et cetera, who offer their services to minister free of charge. So minister answered the issue of foreign national. The bill makes it very clear that all learners, any learner, parent or guardian, has not provided any required documents, whether the learner or such adult person acting on behalf of the learner during the application for admission, shall nonetheless be allowed to attend school. So this would include every child within the country, whether you are foreign national or South African citizen. And so how do we, you know, we have a capacity building program and support program within the department, and once this bill has passed, there will be advocacy and awareness raising sessions on the bill and its implications, so that parents can understand fully their role, particularly, you know, in engaging with the school, showing interest with the budget of the school, with the finances of the schools, with the governance of the school, so that we have a system where parents' participation is valued and where parents' participation will be welcome. And I think, you know, that's what we aim for, more parent participation, so that they can inform their children's schooling. And when it comes to resources for implementation, there was a whole exercise done on costing. And indeed, the department is aware of its responsibility when it comes to infrastructure, staffing, in order to ensure that, you know, we are ready for the implementation of the bill when it reaches that stage. And the department, particularly when it comes to our infrastructure, et cetera, are working on those plans. And we are ensuring that within the budget that is available, that these infrastructure, the monies for infrastructure are allocated. So that's basically, you know, the questions that I think I had to answer with legal, that have legal implications. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Mr. Lebek, then something.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. A lot of questions have been responded to. I'll just touch on a few, or probably add two examples to emphasize the response that MISA has provided. The questions around support to provided to SGBs and preparing them for public hearings, the bill is no longer in the hands of the Department of Education anymore. It's now a parliamentary process. So we will not be in a position to be participating much in the preparations for hearing, for public hearings, and prepare SGBs around it. But we do, during the hearing, provide a big background to those who are attending the hearing so they know what it entails. We must indicate that the bill has been with us for a very long time. Before it went to Parliament, the department went through the same process of coming up with these clauses, consulting, requesting for public comments, have their own hearings, and what went to Parliament was a product of how we dealt with stakeholders and how we contacted them and how we told them about the bill. So the final that went to Parliament was a product of those. So we believe it is Parliament now that is taking responsibility for this bill. You'll indicate, you realize when you talk about dispute resolution, just for the sake of emphasis, that the bill is full of due processes. What must the HOD do in case there are disagreements? Because we have been challenged where HODs will take unilateral decisions. Sometimes the SGBs will also take unilateral decisions, but the bill is full of steps that needs to be taken in case something is not going right. So somewhere there are disagreements. This is the first step, the second step, and the third step, and that's how we deal with this. And there are no costs attached to this. It's a matter of an SGB that is not satisfied about a particular issue, follow the following steps and engage the department and the HOD in that regard. And no cost is allocated to them. This links us to the question on which HOD are we talking about? We're referring to provincial HOD. We normally refer to the HOD at national level as the Director General, but we have the term HOD, we're referring to the 9 provincial heads of educational departments. And these are the ones that are given the responsibility to manage the affairs of education in those provinces. The issue of central procurement, I can just deal with it by means of an example. That schools are charged exorbitant funds when they buy material. Either it's food for nutrition in school, or whether they're buying textbooks and learner materials, computers, and any other sort of thing. The prices then get tripled and doubled. What the department is sort of doing is that government should use its buying power and negotiate with providers and come up with a reasonable way of reducing the cost of buying things. Like if we were to buy a textbook can cost us something like 250 rand per textbook. But if we go to the producers and those who really are suppliers of these and we want to buy in bulk, the price of the textbook might become lesser. Then what we have in the Bella Bill is an enabling statement that says any school that wants to be part and parcel of this can voluntarily come together with other schools and be able to purchase this thing at cost price. So we're doing this for the economies of scale and nothing else. It's not compulsory. Schools can continue to purchase materials on their own, but those that will enter into what government has agreed with the suppliers and producers of materials, then they can easily do that. So we were just putting in an enabling statement in that way. Homeschooling and inferior curriculum. How do we determine whether the curriculum is inferior or not? There are many curricula in the world that are known and registered. All these curriculum are known to the department. So if a parent wants to homeschool a child, the first thing that they need to indicate is to indicate what curriculum are they going to follow. Is this a British curriculum? Is it a French curriculum? Which we know what it entails. What we don't want to do is for a parent not to even know what curriculum the parent is offering. Now that we know this registered curriculum right through the world, we will know whether this curriculum is inferior or is in line or is better than the curriculum that we are offering as a country. So we are just preventing parents from not having a curriculum but want to homeschool a child. So they must give us a recognized and known curriculum that we should be able to allow them to continue with those type of curriculum. The other issues have been dealt with, but I want to look at the one that we speak of parents that prevent children from going to school. We're putting that stuff because there's nothing. Children are prevented from going to school when there are disruptions in the communities. Communities fighting for electricity, water, and roads, and find adults going to schools and lock the schools and chase children away. We want to criminalize them. And how we deal with it, it will be a matter of the law enforcement agencies, because there will be a law now that says you can't do that. This applies to the same people that we're saying they are standing at our traffic lights with children during daylight, and nobody says anything about children that are supposed to be at school and are sitting with parents and begging. Whether South Africans or non-South Africans, there is no law at the moment that will make the law enforcement agencies take those people out of the roads or arrest them. So we're putting it in an act so that there will be a law that prevents those people from doing that and preventing children from attending school. This is linked to the question that was asked about learner attendance. How do we know whether the child is at school or not? The bill does have a section that talks to the role of the school, the role of the SGB, the role of the principal, the role of the parents in ensuring continuous attendance of a learner. And this will be done to ensure that school-going children are at school. And if they are not at school, within a few days' time, the school will have noticed that the child is not at school and follow certain procedures that are listed in the Bella Bill for the sake of the children to be at school. This is linked to the question that spoke about children that are in grade R until grade 9. That is the school compulsory going age that is determined by the Constitution, that every child has the right to basic education. That basic education starts from grade R, and the baby starts and it ends up at grade 9. So those children between those ages must be at school by hooks or by crooks. If not, when the Bella Bill kicks in, it then criminalizes anyone who prevents the child from attendance at that particular time. I think, Chairperson, you've handled it correctly. The question of food and Sasa in Volmarsa is not part of the Bella Bill, but we may engage outside the meeting if it's an issue that is affecting children. And Chairperson, those are the questions that have been asked. And those are our responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We all need to accept that there's lots of interest, particularly in basic education by everybody in this country. And if there's anyone who wants to introduce aerodynamics as a subject in primary schools, they should not raise it with us here in the during the Bella Bill. They say there's somewhere where you could come up with your suggestions on how we could do that. That matters that are sent to us, not talking to what we are, with what is on the table, they should be put on the parking lot for some other time. We were supposed to have an input by the legal department, by parliament's lawyers. I'm told that they are having some engagement. I don't know if there's anyone who is here to replace them, or if not, so should we ask them to give their input in writing and send it to all who are in this meeting? What should be the way forward?
I just have one follow-up question, Chair. I raise my hand.
Let's give to Mzwandile Matthews. I think they'll be speaking for the first time now since we started the meeting. Over to you, Mzwandile Matthews.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and the Honorable members who are present at the meeting, the Honorable Deputy Minister, the colleagues that support parliamentary processes, including the NCOP, my colleagues from the Department of Basic Education. Chair, I'm part of the GBE team. I'm in the Minister's office as a special advisor to the Minister. If you would allow me, Chair, I wanted to expand on two or three other matters that the colleagues would have touched, including a comment that was made by the DM. on the universality of access to basic education within the country. Chair, you'll recall that section 29 starts with the words all persons. It doesn't say all South Africans, it says all persons. Of course, who are classified as people who qualify for basic education, including adult education. So the delineation between South African children and foreigners, whether they are legal or not, when we promulgate legislation, we've got to be guided by the principal legal document, which is our constitution of the country, which makes that broad pronouncement on all persons. Related to that one, Chair, is another reference again to Section 29(3) of the Constitution. I thought Mr. Ndlebe was going to expand on this a bit. You'll recall that every provider who provides what could be regarded as private provisioning of basic education outside the public school are enjoined by the Constitution to register their programs. So when they register the programs, part of the requirements is for them to state the type of curriculum they're going to be following in delivering the education. What we are emphasizing in the bill is that whatever choice that would have been made, if we agree with it, should not be of an inferior standard to that is provided within public schools. So to ensure that even at home, there's nothing else that is delivered there other than quality education, which is what we're striving for in our public schooling system. So the emphasis that the quality of that provisioning, which is done by a singular parent or the parents being the father and the mother or whosoever is enjoined with that responsibility to do, we are not going to be getting an inferior type of education provisioning. The third issue, Chair, relates to central procurement. I would wish to remind the members about what happened in Limpopo in 2012. You'll recall, Chairperson, prior to us having the common catalogue of textbooks that could be used, where we aspire to have at least 8 choices per subject within the catalogue of textbooks that we could use. Publishers were free to charge any type of price for any book, whatever quality of the book, whatever volume of the book, whether that book meets the requirements of the curriculum or not. They were free to charge as they deem fit. But we then, as a department, initiated the process of the national catalog at which these books were actually stipulated there. Now, unfortunately, the 2012 Limpopo issue surprised everybody. That's why Parliament, or NCOP in particular, invoked Section 101B to remediate whatever that would have been faced by Limpopo, not only on procurement matters, but also on administrative matters. The thing that we found there, Chairperson, I'm saying this particularly so because I was one of the deployed administrators in that province, was to then take a chance of negotiating with the publishers whose books were listed in the catalogue, even further discount those prices, because the money we received from Treasury was not enough for us to procure at price. So we had to negotiate for the discounts that we could get from publishers, who, I must say, Chairperson, were extremely generous with this Limpopo situation. The Chair may recall that the time was deployed was after March. So a whole quarter of the year of school calendar year was already lost. And we needed to get this book as soon as possible to schools and get the children of the province receiving the same quality education that the other children in other provinces were getting. So we managed to negotiate that. For us to be able to do that process, we had to centrally procure. If schools were allowed to procure as they did, I don't think, Chairperson, most of the schools would have received the books at the times we had expected them to do. We even negotiated the lowering of the stationery that the grades were actually supposed to get. So a very good practice, Chairperson, where, as Mr. Ndlebe was saying, and advocate, Mr., you maximize on the economies of scale. What is even better about this one for me, from the experience of Limpopo, you'd find a situation where almost all the schools or all children in the schools in all the grades were commonly using almost the same textbooks, or the top three discounted textbooks, which were coming from the catalog. It's not something that we picked up from anywhere. We got from the catalog, which we know the quality of those books and the content itself is almost of a similar type of a quality. The last point, Chairperson, relates to the question that was raised on committees, task teams, and commissions that are normally appointed. Assist with the minister with any topic the minister would have actually identified, including in this case as a reference to curriculum development. Chair, I would want to confirm what Advocate Lisa was saying. There is a process by which this is done. You know, commissions, in terms of the law, must be appointed by the president. But a minister at a level is enjoined by the law to appoint either a committee or a task team as may be deemed necessarily by the minister in the case. In our case, it's Minister Mutsev. So that is a process that is actually happening. It's not a bill that will pronounce on something that has never happened before. It's general practice that is there. There are rates at which we're supposed to be paying these experts who are actually doing us this service, specialized, professional, and otherwise. Of course, Advocate Mr. was even correct to say some individuals may even offer gratuities. Some of this that is required there, especially at the university level. So I just wanted to expand on those 3 points, Chairperson, so that there's clarity on how this thing is based on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. I was told that the legal person is not going to be the meeting, hoping that they can give us the opinion in writing, but I'm told that there is Ms. Pumela Elengema, who is on the platform. May I, and already questions were asked, if you think that there are some of the things that you may answer after making your presentation or during your presentation, you may do that. Let's give over to Ms. Pumela Elengema. Over to you, ma'am.
Sorry, Chair?
Yes.
Honorable Munyai's hand is up.
Oh yes, Honorable Munyai.
Sorry, I was following up. I think first and foremost on the process, I think I agree, because the bill would have passed the issues of the socioeconomic analysis and also the certificate from the state law advisor. Now it's within at Parliament. So therefore is the Bill of Parliament. I agree with that view. The question that I asked Honorable Chair relating, because it was issues of the challenges of the legal taken to High Court. That context of a specific court that was challenging issues that require certain amendment on the section. If those documents on record are available or those kits are available, they can be forwarded to all of ourselves, because that question was not answered. The second issue, Honorable Chair, we know that the issues of procurement is highly contested. It's highly of a logistics issues nightmare, but if they are done within the province, I know this because while we centralize the issues of the vaccine on the with respect to health, we know the dynamics and the challenges related to that fact. So I don't want to influence anyone, but would also, you know, of course, have a engagement with public aid within our own respective areas. But is there any international benchmarking with regarding to this bill? Because maybe perhaps the portfolio committee, before embarking on the processes or public hearing, may conduct the international study towards that to get, because once they started with the process, they can't have a break in that process. I'm just asking those two questions. If there's any international benchmarking with regard to these issues. And I'm done. I won't raise my hand again, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Chair, Honorable Ngozi, can you please take over?
I was saying that that let's give the opportunity to Pumelele, Ms. Pumelele, to give input on the legal processes, Parliament Legal Services. Over.
Greetings, Chairperson, and the honourable members and everyone on the platform. My name is Pumelele Ngema, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. I trust I am audible. I must first apologize.
You are loud and clear, ma'am.
I was attending to the select committee that is dealing with the transport bills. So it was a meeting that was long set and we were dealing with substance and I had to attend to issues and presentations in that committee, Chairperson. And as soon as I was done my election, I requested to be excused so that I could come over to the side. I realized, Chairperson, that there was something forwarded to my chief advisor, whom unfortunately it had not come through to me, but I asked the committee secretary to send it to me. So I'm going to be doing an oral presentation. There is nothing yet that I've written down, but a straightforward issue in terms of the process, Chairperson. The first question that is posed on the correspondence that was sent is how to process the bill. And Chairperson, that one is going to be done in terms of the National Council of Provinces Rules of Parliament, specifically the first one, Chairperson, relates to the committee's process, and that would be National Council of Provinces Rule 177 together with Rule 176. The rule in terms of Section 177, it speaks to the committee's functions as to what exactly a committee of a select committee, which is a committee of the Second House, the National Council of Provinces, may do once the bill is referred to them, which is the case in respect of the Basic Education Amendment Bill. The bill has already been referred to this committee. So the committee may do everything that is set out in Section 177, which includes inquiring into the subject of the bill, and the beginning of that has happened by the virtue that the committee has had a briefing from the department today. That begins the process, Chairperson. And therefore, in light of that provision, as well as Section 176 addresses the question about public participation and the opportunity for the public to make input. In terms of that section, Chairperson, the rule is very clear. It says when a bill has been referred to a committee, the committee may arrange its own business in a manner that allows the facilitation of public involvement in the process. And basically what that says is that now that the committee has received the briefing from the department and at least has some kind of an idea what the content and the provisions of the bill is all about, the committee may then make a decision or deliberate on the way forward and set out the processes as to whether it will be calling written submissions, oral submissions, and consider its own program and other issues at hand. Chairperson, as I understand, we are approaching the time for the parliament to rise, as well as knowing that 2024 will be the time for national elections. So it is in line with the Rule 176 that the committee will decide on its program and how it will run its business in terms of dealing and deliberating and considering the content and the legislative processing of the Bella Bill. The second question, Chairperson, which is not necessarily a legal question, it's a question about timing of public input. As I've said, Chairperson, it's a question that the committee will have to engage on. As members of the committee, once they have deliberated, they can then decide on how it will run its processes in line with calling for the engagement of the public, as well as getting input from any of the interested stakeholders. And it was correct, as some of the portion of the meeting I had, that the process is now before Parliament, and Parliament is going to be making its decisions on how to handle this process. And furthermore, the only distinction that I may make, Chairperson, in terms of the National Assembly processes and the processes of the Council, it's a very sore point for me, is that there is a self-imposed 8-week cycle that even the amended rules of the House, they only increased it from 6 weeks to 8 weeks. I'm not really sure what it means and how it translates into the processes, especially the processes that the House and the committee, the select committees, must deal with. But perhaps the secretariat and the content advisors, in terms of them having dealt with this mostly all the time, they may explain. But there is that self-imposed 8 weeks rule, which requires that all the processes in terms of bills must be dealt with. And in this case, because it's a Section 76 bill, the joint tagging mechanism has already tagged it and given a binding position that it is indeed a Section 76. And therefore, we will definitely need the involvement and a serious involvement of the provinces where negotiating mandates, final mandates and voting mandates must be produced out of the process of engaging with them. But it is a process that is run by the select committee as the extended arm of the National Council of Provinces. So whatever happens, Chairperson, will be in line with Rule 177 and all the processes that are set out there. It's quite a number of sections, including what kind of consultations and what the committee may do once the whole processes are done, and providing the report at the end of the processes in line with the National Council of Provinces Rule 178. So those are the three provisions that will assist the committee to guide them into what to do and how to decide its own arranged business as to how to handle this matter. And then lastly, Chairperson, the question was, as I've addressed the public participation process, and that the committee will take its own decision on how to call for public input, whether it's going to be adverts in national papers, newspapers, or some other media methods, like social media methods will be used. That is the call that the committee must make. And in terms of the time frame, it's also the call that the committee must make, considering the complexity, the interest, and the importance of the content of the bill itself. And as it already arises from what the members have been listening to, there's definitely quite an interest in what the committee is addressing right now. It's a serious issue that has national importance, Chairperson. So the last question, which was to say, do I have any other legal matters that I need to bring to the committee? I think in light of that, Chairperson, considering the constraints of time, I am just going to suggest that now that the bill is before the committee and with the process that the committee will decide on how to engage, I will definitely be preparing a presentation at a later stage to guide the legal issues and speak to what was done in the National Assembly as well as if it's possibly the meeting of the committee where I'll be presenting will be after the receiving of the negotiating mandates and the call for the public submission, the presentation then that I'll be making as the legal advisor who's handling this bill will be speaking to all the matters that would have been raised by the submissions as well as some legal issues that members may not be clear on. Even though I've missed some part of the meeting as I was engaged elsewhere, I will definitely be following on the recorded stream and will take the questions that the members had and address them in my presentation, Chairperson. I would say for now, Chairperson, I will stop there and take the questions. And if it's still necessary, I will then prepare the written legal opinion on the processes already been asked. I will be guided by you, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Precise to the point. going forward, I think we have our secretary that is the engine of the committee, the secretary, the researcher, the content advisor, will advise us going forward, and then we'll have a program that will show a step by step. From here, we'll be doing this up to the last date of the public hearings and ultimately a report, the committee report, and then and the matter being referred to the House. I wonder if there are members who want to comment, those who want to comment and ask questions to the legal person, the Parliament's lawyers. Okay, there's none. Noltando, are you there? Am I audible?
Yes, Chair, you are.
Okay, yeah. All right, yeah. Maybe at this point we should release the department and everybody, and then we continue with our meeting in the absence. Will that be in order? If there's no objection to that, then yeah. Is the DM still in the meeting? DM thrown out. The DG in?
Yes, she is, sir.
Oh yeah. Okay. No, DM. Do you want to say something in closure? Your closing remarks before we deal with other issues of this. The select committee. Over to you, DM.
Oh, I see she's been kicked out, sir.
Is the DG in? The DG is with the minister.
It is in place. Chair, the DG is at UNESCO.
Oh yeah, I was saying that must be with the minister. Okay. However, I'm trying to get
rid of the DM, Chair.
If the DM is not in the meeting, can anyone who is leading the delegation to say some few words before we close this part of this set of the meeting?
Thank you, Chair. In closing, I want to respond to whether the Bella Bill is complying to international standards. And what we want to say is that we need to understand that South Africa is a signatory to global treaties that promote economic, cultural, and social rights of people. But as a member of the UN and Commonwealth, that pushes the right of the child. As a country, we are obliged to meet certain standards to make education compulsory and free. So when you go through the Bella Bill, that's what you see, making the R compulsory, keeping children at school, dealing with those that prevent children from attending school. The African Charter for the Rights and Welfare of the Child, instead in 1986, also drives the country to develop laws that put the child first, that we leave no child behind as we make this education compulsory. So the Bella Bill is a response to this treaty. That is why we put in the child first, abolish corporal punishment, deal with all the things that makes education easier for the child and more than anything. And ensure that the administration part of our schooling, including the government thereof, supports this idea of putting the child first. I thought that may indicate because the question came up and say, hey, internationally, where do we raise this thing? And that's exactly what you're trying to do, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable members, this is to the department. This is the end of our meeting. Till we invite you to another one.
Apologies, Chair. I see Mr. Kuno. Mr. Kuno's hand is up.
Oh, yeah, and the Kuno.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the Select Committee. Yeah, in the absence of the DM and the DG who's in at UNESCO and the acting DG is also attending a portfolio committee meeting. I, on behalf of the department and as the relevant line function that deals with the bill, I want to express the department's gratitude for having been invited to brief the committee, and we have gained a lot from these interactions. And if there are any matters that we may have not responded to, we'll look into that. But we'll also be on standby should the committee still need us to come back. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ndede Kuno. I thought you were going to tell us about the finances. Thank you very much. With those words, thank you, Ndede Kuno and the team. Thank you very much. You may leave the meeting so that we continue with our internal issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
We have a set of minutes.
Excuse me, Chair. I'm sorry, Chair. My gadget doesn't allow me to raise my hand here. Are you also excuses others provinces? Thank you.
Yes, no, you are.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair. Thanks.
All our guests were dealing with minutes of the last meeting. So you were not in that meeting, so it won't make sense to keep you in this meeting to discuss minutes of meetings that you're not part of. May you flag the minutes. Yeah, minutes of the Wednesday, 1st of November. That's the first page. Just run through the meeting. Yeah, that's the minutes. Any comments from the members?
Chair?
Yes.
No comments. I want to move the adoption of
There are no comments in the absence of any comments. Is there any mover for adoption of this minute?
Yes, Chair. I move for adoption of this minute as for reflection.
Yes, Honorable Mgozi, move any second.
Don't get any second, Chair.
Don't get any second. Thank you very much. With this word, say we'll, the rest will be discussed in the next meeting of the committee, and then we'll get the information from our technical team. Thank you very much. I'll say this meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair.